You're listening to GeekCast Radio's Music Spotlight. Here's an artist spotlight on me, Stan Bush, with your hosts, TFG1 Mike and Mike the Birdman Doc.
Hello and welcome to GeekCast Radio. This is the second to last artist spotlight, which will continue the epic music spotlight we have going on here at GCR. I am one of your hosts, TFG1 Mike, and joining me is Mike the Birdman Dodd from This Week in Geek and all the other stuff he does. Hello.
Good morning, in essence. I've only been awake a couple of hours, and I'm good to go.
Yeah, it's 7 o'clock at night, dude.
That's the problem with these medications. Night and day mean nothing. Thankfully, all my clients are on the West Coast, so it doesn't really matter so much.
That's good. So really quickly, before we get into the meat of today's topic, what have you been up to?
Mostly been getting back into the swing of things with reviewaday.ca, producing about 2 to 3 episodes a week, just because some of these games I'm going through are really long.
And really bad, some of them are.
Yeah, some of them are frankly friggin' terrible. Other than that, This Week in Geek is just turning 5 as of this recording. So yes, we're getting ready to do that tomorrow. And I'm doing a lot of convention appearances. I got one coming up next month in Guelph. I got one coming up in Boston and another in Toronto and maybe some internationally. I'm just waiting to hear back. So busy. I don't sleep.
Yes. And for me, I've been doing a bunch of Tooncast Beyond stuff. We are getting into the meat of Toycast as that has come back in full swing. As of this recording, I am about to go into later this evening a record with my buddy Sween Halleck and Steve Megatron. We're going to be talking about the Turtles toys for the episode 87 of Toycast. So all the Playmates stuff, all the NECA stuff, all that good stuff. But we are here in this 80s music spotlight, the artist spotlight, to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Stan Bush. We'll be back after this. You got the touch. You got the power. So we are back here on the GeekCast Radio Artist Spotlight for Stan Bush, and we have 4 talking points, really. I don't know if you've come up with anything else, but we're going to go through different talking points as far as how Stan's career has gone and his involvement in different things, and talking about how some fans just seem to think that all he does is Transformers songs, which is incorrect. The first thing is the guy's had a nearly 30-year career. I mean,
he's been producing music with his band Barrage since the early 80s, and he's actually been tapped to do a number of different things outside of the Transformers thing. I mean, one of the little interesting bits of trivia is The Touch wasn't actually written originally for Transformers. It was written for Sylvester Stallone's Cobra in 1985. Yep. So the song sat around for a year before it got attached to Transformers, which I think is a little bit of a little neat bit of trivia. Plus, Stan's done music for the Olympics. He's done music for Sailor Moon, and I think he's done some other properties as well.
Didn't he win a Daytime Emmy Award for a song on Guiding Light?
Yeah. I can't remember what the song was specifically, but yeah, he has done a lot of other things. And the thing is, I think the thing that makes Stan's music, at least to me, so endearing is the fact that Stan's music is that arena anthem 80s rock style, and his style has not changed so much over the years, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing looking at other acts out of the 80s, like, say, Bon Jovi, for example, who I think would be a contemporary person to compare Stan against, because they do sound alike in some ways. I know we're going to catch heat for saying that, but I think that's one of the things that makes Stan's music. It's something, you know, you're listening to Stan Bush, even if you only hear 5 seconds of it, you know exactly what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the thing about it. And I think Stan is an artist that he knows his audience, but he's not an artist that really had to evolve. I mean, he's evolved a little bit, but he's an artist that can stay in an 80s time capsule because, let's face it, his music is timeless. He has that same upbeat, positive message in almost every single song.
I think if any of Stan's detractors were to come out, I think they would kind of agree with you in what you said. He is existing in that 80s time capsule. Whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, Stan, if he's anything, he's consistent. His style, I think technically the music evolves because you hear the music get more and more complicated as time gets on. Like if you just hear how it's composed, but
yeah.
from the layman's ear, not a lot has changed since 1986, and that's a good thing in some ways. Now, not every artist necessarily has to evolve to reinvent themselves. I mean, one notable artist or band that I think has tried to reinvent themselves, and I think it's failed miserably, in my opinion, is Linkin Park. If you go back and listen to their stuff from the early 90s, or sorry, not from the early 90s, from the late 90s to now,
yeah,
it sounds completely different, and they've lost the heart. That is not the same with Stan Bush. It's the same heart and soul that's been producing since the 80s to now. And I guess Stan's music is, it's sort of a sign of the times. I mean, I still think the 1980s is some of the greatest era we've had musical innovation in.
Right.
But you get into the 90s, and you hear this grungy, alternative, very dark sound, very crunchy with the bass, and Stan's music is very light, just because it's very, I don't know how to describe it. It's very light music. It's not very dark. It doesn't have a lot of super crunchy bass in it. It's just... It is what it is. And when you go into the 2000s, when once again we hit this musical change up, where there was all sorts of new artists emerging, new sounds and new trends, Stan stuck by his guns. Now, that's not to say he didn't evolve during that time, because if you listen to some of his stuff off some of his later albums, anything post-2002, the sound does change. And I don't think necessarily always for the better, because I think Stan's versions of The Touch sounded better pre-2002 to anything currently, except for one song, which I really like. And once again, I know I'll catch shit for this. I like Stan's version of The Touch that it was originally done for Revenge of the Fallen, called Sam's Theme, that had the Linkin Park-esque inspired rap in it.
Now, I'm not someone who is into rap music. I can listen. I listen to some of it, but it's not a genre of music I listen to all the time. It's not, you know, if I have, because I have one playlist in my iTunes that has all of my favorite songs from all of my favorite artists, and you know, it's a majority of what music I have in my iTunes. And if, say, a DMX song came up that I heard from, like, I don't know, Cradle to the Grave or what, you know, say it came up in a movie and I heard it, I'd probably like it, but rap is not something I listen to in general, and I vehemently did not like that version of Sam's Theme, The Touch. I like what Stan did with that version as far as giving it a more, I guess you could say,
contemporary feel.
Well, contemporary, but I would also equate that original rap version to a Linkin Park song. It's basically Stan as Chester Bennington, whatever his last name is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the other guy, Mike Enzo, not Enzo.
Shinoda. Enzo's,
yeah. It's basically Stan as that guy. And then the one rap guy that he has in that as Mike. And it's like, really?
See,
I love what Stan did with it with his vocals, but I didn't like the rap part at all.
I think the problem is the rap needed to be thought out a little bit more. Like, I would say that was very indicative of Linkin Park, maybe 2003 to 2005, very much in the Meteora / early Minutes to Midnight phase. And it wasn't bad. I think it was a good risk. I really do. And a lot of people shat on him for it. I really like that version. In fact, that's the version I prefer almost to the 1986 version. I really like that version. I'm not a big fan of the one that came out in 2007 because it sounds so different. But also, taking that into account, Stan's voice has changed over the last 30 years.
His voice has changed. The thing about the 2007 version, that was originally done for a BotCon live performance. So, I mean, actually produce, like, you know, going into the studio, laying the track down, and doing all the studio stuff to that live track. That's probably why you're not liking it. The live version of it is so much better.
I'd say what I don't like about it, it's the arrangement. Because the bass track is more or less the same, like the same notes and everything, but it's the arrangement that's just a little bit different. Now, it's not so bad when playing through Guitar Hero, for example, because this originally came out with Guitar Hero World Tour as a piece of free DLC. It's a little different playing it as opposed to hearing it, and you can hear it more when you listen to it as opposed to playing it. And I know that sounds really strange, but once again, it comes down to the arrangement of it. And one of the things I would love to have seen Stan do over the years, he's always done the touch. That will be the song he'll be eternally known for. Even 30, 40 years after he's dead, people will know him for that. I want to know why he's never gone back and redone Dare.
I am actually very well. Okay, here's the thing. I found out from our good friend TV's Mr. Neil and his co-host Ben over at Animation Aficionados that Dare, even though Stan sung it, Stan didn't write that. Vince DiCola wrote that.
See, I really think those guys should collaborate again, or at least if Stan could talk to Vince, say, "Hey, do you mind?"
Right.
I don't think Vince is doing a whole lot right now, so I don't think he'd care.
Right. And see, that's the thing. I think that, you know, what probably happened and why people always recognize the fact that, oh, it's Stan sings it, he must have wrote it. You know, people might have that. I had that misconception until Neil set me straight. The thing about it is, maybe Stan and Vince back then made a deal and said, you know, hey, as long as you give me writing credit somewhere, you can take credit for the rest of the song. Stan is someone who has, throughout his career, has embraced his fandom. And what I mean by that is the fact that, you know, you said to me off air, he knows his fans, he knows what his fans want. Stan Bush is not an artist. First of all, he's not an up-and-coming artist that needs to reinvent themselves every 2 years. He's not an artist that, you know, people love new stuff out of him, but they love it if they, for me, I love it if it has that 80s sound, because that's what I know Stan to be, is an 80s artist.
Yeah, and it wouldn't suit him well for Stan to evolve his sound so much, as evidenced by the touch version that was all, I said, no one liked it, and the video even got cut on YouTube. Even if you hear the version on the album, in my opinion, you can hear the cut.
You can hear the cuts.
You know something's missing, and that takes away from it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let's talk about his involvement with the Transformers franchise. Now, you brought up earlier about that the touch was originally supposed to be in Cobra.
Or it was either Cobra or Over the Top. I'm pretty sure it was Cobra.
It's Cobra.
The hell would that work in Cobra?
Hold on. Let me explain something. Again, Ben over at Neil's buddy Ben over at Animation Aficionados, his co-host over there, actually linked me to a YouTube video where someone put the 86 version against footage from Cobra. It's on YouTube somewhere. I'll try to get the link for the show notes for this episode, but it just doesn't – The Touch, the 86 version of The Touch, is Optimus Prime's theme song to me. That's what it fucking is. It shouldn't be in any other 1980s movie. It just shouldn't.
The only way I could see the Touch working in a movie like Cobra is over credits. Or maybe over some kind of like a training montage. But Cobra,
right?
You're the disease and he's the cure. It doesn't, like, you know what I mean? It's a 1980s shoot 'em up movie. It's basically RoboCop without the armor.
Exactly.
And it just doesn't suit it, which I'm surprised The Touch was commissioned for this movie. I'm glad it ended up in Transformers. In fact, The Touch was the song that played when I came into the reception hall at my wedding. So, you see, it works in happy situations, not so much when you're blowing the brains out of the back of someone's head.
Yeah, that's, well, unless it's a robot's head.
But even then, it doesn't work well with over-the-top violence. It works more with action shots, like
karate fights. Like Optimus driving down the little thing and hitting thrust and then, you know, transforming in midair, the trailer explodes and he's firing on everybody.
Yeah, it works into very cinematic action. And by extension, this song would not work in the new Transformers movies. And that's something I think we should probably talk about too.
Yeah.
Stan wanted to get some of his music in the 2007 to 2011 movies. Should it have happened? Yes, but only in a cameo capacity. And let me explain that. Stan's music does not fit with the Michael Bay version of the Transformers, simply because it's a darker world. It's a different world. These are not the toys we grew up with. This is not the world we grew up with.
Right.
So I think it would have been cool had Bumblebee been going through these stations and you just heard 3 seconds of it. That would have worked. Or to hear it very, very muffled as Optimus Prime drives up to Sam for the first time or something. See, that would have been okay.
I disagree with that. I agree with your fact that it could have been an end credit song. The live action Michael Bay movies, you know, we can love, hate, just don't care about them, whatever. I don't think The Touch, even as a background sound within the movie, even as a, you know, background noise, I just don't think it would have worked. It wouldn't have worked with any of the themes in any of those movies.
See, Linkin Park is the perfect sound for these, except for the last one. That was the weakest of all the Linkin Park songs.
That was horrible.
What I've Done, in my opinion, is the new Touch.
Right.
Whenever I hear that song for 3 seconds in the back of my head, I always hear Peter Cullen go, "To those of you amongst the stars, we are here, we are waiting."
Right.
That works. Yeah. But I think The Touch, like I said, would have worked as a cameo for less than 5 seconds, but more than 2. You know what I mean? Just enough for your ear to recognize it and then be done with it. But it wouldn't have worked as a set piece song. It would not have worked playing on the radio for 30 seconds. In fact, I'd like to know what the fuck 21 Guns by Green Day was doing in Revenge of the Fallen. But I've got
that's a topic for another time.
Yeah. But I've got friends of mine in the music industry who license songs to movies.
Right.
And it basically comes down to what executives want in. It comes down to money, pure and simple. Should Stan have gotten something in the movie? Absolutely. Should he be in a Maybe Stan, because he is he's a composer first who writes guitar riffs. Should he have been able to do something? If he could have worked with Steve Jablonski to do part of the score, even just a part of a song, that would have been fine.
Yeah.
Or sample something from Vince DiCola's score from the movie. That would have been neat. Man, you know how cool it would have been if when you saw the Fallen, and I know I'm going back to Revenge of the Fallen here, if you'd had some epic lead up and they had just a few samples of the Unicron theme, you know how cool that would have made that movie? Not exactly watchable, but maybe listenable.
I just don't know. Like, okay, I believe, and I'm gonna actually look at this to make sure that I am correct. He tried to get in a song called Ground Zero, retitled Till All Are One, into one of the movies as well.
Once again, that would have been a fantastic credit song.
Right. Till, well, here's my transition away from the films. Till All Are One actually is the end credits to Transformers War for Cybertron.
Now, I really hope he has something in Fall of Cybertron when that comes out in a year.
Yeah. It's actually funny. You've played War for Cybertron, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know that background music that's in there?
Yeah.
When I had first heard that on one of the Game Informer online articles, podcasts, whatever, I heard that piece of music and I'm like, did Stan do that? Because it sounds, that background music sounds like something that he would do. Or it sounds like something that Vince would do that maybe Stan would collaborate on. And I asked him one time, I said, did you do this piece of music? And he said, sadly not. But yeah, I mean, Till All Are One is a great, great Transformers theme song. Now, what pisses me off is the fans out there that think he is just about cashing in on the touch or dare or, you know, thinking that he is nothing but Transformers musician art. Yeah.
It's what he's best known for.
Right. It is what he's best known for. But the guy does have plenty of other songs. You and I differ on this opinion, but I've recently been going back and to prepare for this, going back and listening to In This Life and Dream the Dream. When Dream the Dream hit in 2010, I told Stan, I said, hey, can I get a copy of this and I'll write a review for it. Sent me a signed CD. I listened to it and I really enjoyed Dream the Dream. I don't know if it's that I like the way that he does his love songs or the way that he tells stories in some of the songs on Dream the Dream. I'm starting to like a lot of the songs on In This Life, but for me, I prefer Dream the Dream. But he is just so much more. And it just makes me mad to no end that people just assume that, oh, well, Stan Bush, you know, A lot of the jokes I'll see on Twitter or Facebook or message boards, oh, Stan Bush needs a check, so here he is submitting the touch and dare to, you know, some random Transformers thing. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I've talked to the guy 6 times and I basically have an email relationship with the guy that I know better. But people need to give his stuff a chance here.
Yeah, well, it's also probably not Stan himself all the time necessarily pushing this on different Transformers products. I mean, there's probably some management team involved. And hey, if it sells, it sells. I say work it. You know what I mean? Now, that being said, I listened to Dream the Dream before the show twice. And I would argue that In This Life is a better album, which was his 2007 thing, because I think he took more of a chance. Like, you hear more, in my opinion, more technical guitar. There's one song he does called I'll Never Fall. Yeah. I honestly believe that should have been a radio single. That was friggin' fantastic. I actually pitched this to my station manager and a few other radio stations that I know, because I felt the song was that good. Are there good songs on Dream the Dream? Absolutely.
Never Hold Back and I'll Never Fall. Those two songs, the two number one songs from both from In This Life and Dream the Dream, the first tracks, they sound similar to me. They do, even though they're completely different. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I had, at the time when I had got the review sample, I basically had Dream the Dream on repeat for about 4 days straight, and I basically have those songs stuck in my head.
And I guess my problem with it is the fact that I listened to Dream the Dream twice in a row and all the music seemed to blend together. Now, that can be a sign of a CD that has tremendously just good mixing. The fact that it just transitions smoothly from one track to the next. But I think In This Life did more with it. Plus the fact we did get, Till All Are One. We also got the 2007 version of The Touch. But I think there were just a few songs on that where I think he really took a chance to express himself differently than what we're used to. Dream the Dream is classic Stan Bush. In This Life, I think, did something a little more daring.
Right. the other thing, you know, as we've been saying, that he is so much more than just Transformers songs, but at the same time, he still embraces the Transformers fandom. Your Time off of Dream the Dream. Randall NG and Dr. Smoove put together a Transformers G1 animated video, like a music video, animation, full animation, everything to that song. And they actually, you know, with the imagery and the song, told a story in video. And I absolutely love that video. A single that was supposed to be on Dream the Dream, but they just he didn't have it done in time, was called Heat of the Battle, which is his first ever digital only release ever. They used that he used that for another music video, which actually goes against War for Cybertron gameplay. You know, so I mean, as we've said, he knows his audience.
I think there is one song which he doesn't get nearly enough credit for in the 90s, when I think it was the Ocean Group did the dub for Sailor Moon. He did a song for the season one finale where they're fighting Queen Beryl called She's Got the Power. And I've only ever found that song once. I don't even know whether it's out on CD. I think it may be available via the Sailor Moon soundtrack, which is likely way the hell out of print. It was a fantastic song, and that's another thing too. I think Stan could do more music for other franchises. Like I said, I think Stan, the thing that makes him appeal to me is that he doesn't have a rough image. He doesn't have an image that says you must be listened to by angry teenagers, you must do this, that, and the other thing. I mean, when Stan to me has always come across to me as a very family oriented guy. I mean, I've called him when he's playing with his kids and all that stuff, or I've called him late at night and says, hey, I just put my kids to bed, I can't talk too long. And I think that's the thing that makes him appealing, is the fact he can bring a rock edge, like basically power riffs and all that good stuff, to different things, like different franchises, without it having to go to, you know, say your Metallica's, your Disturbs, right, your Systems of a Down. If you want a hard edge, you could do that. But right, with Stan, you get all the technical guitarists with none of the bullshit. I mean, another franchise I think Stan would work very well in would be Power Rangers. Listen to Ron Wasserman's stuff,
yeah,
and compare it against Stan's. Yeah, I think they would work very, very, very well together.
I completely agree. Something else that I didn't even know. I mean, I knew that he did this promotion, but I didn't know what it was exactly. And I'm going to read this word for word. In 2011, Bush recorded High Noon Theme for the wrestling promotion Chikara, which was a parody of the theme song for the 80s cartoon Mask. I have got to find this song.
Yeah, I just read about this myself. I'd be very curious to hear that. In fact, I think Stan could almost make an entire CD of just him covering 80s theme songs. And
I think he's doing that. I've seen him post on Twitter and Facebook about doing local shows out in LA where they're doing covers of famous 70s and 80s tracks. Let me look at his website. Let's see. Okay, let's see. See Stan Live in 2012. Let's see more. The band, okay, Stan Bush, Chuck Wright, and Rick Salon. The Acoustic Saints reinterpret classic rock tunes with a moody atmospheric vibe. Catch 'em Live, faves from the 70s and 80s, plus a few surprises along the way, make up the set. The Saints are rehearsing this for this first live appearance of the new year. Now, this live appearance happened just about a week ago on January 14th. At the Hard Rock Hollywood. So I'm hoping that maybe Stan has footage of that and he'll put it up on his official YouTube channel.
If not, somebody has it somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he is doing stuff like that. You know, for me, Stan, and Stan is probably one of the only artists that only tours to his local area. He doesn't need to. He has such a large and loyal fan base at this point. As much as I would love to see him here in Louisville, Kentucky, he doesn't tour all that much.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've seen him do something in Pittsburgh last year, and right. I was actually tempted to go to it because I'm thinking, that's only a 10-hour drive. I've got nothing else to do.
That was that wrestling thing, I think, that Chikara thing.
I could believe it, but it was he also was playing with some other blues musician. I mean, guaranteed, if you want to see Stan, you go to BotCon. Guaranteed, he's almost there like every year. Yeah. So he's not hard to see. You just have to make the effort to go see him. In fact, if we had more money this year, we were going to invite Stan and his band to play at our wedding. Though, in retrospect, I think he would have died on stage considering how friggin' hot it was that particular day.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some ads and a commercial break and intermission and all that stuff, and we'll be back after this on the GCR Spotlight for Stan Bush.
To Cybertron.
Thank you, Soundwave. I am TFG1 Mike, and you should be listening to my very first podcast, the TFG1 Podcast. 24 episodes covering the entire U.S. run of the 1984 Transformers cartoon. I also have a few supplemental episodes and an interview with Stan Bush. So check out the TFG1 Podcast. You can find it on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Transform and roll out.
You can now hear the Geekcast Radio Network while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free use and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. And when you download Stitcher to hear Geekcast Radio, you'll have a chance to win money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. During registration, hit the promo code box and enter Geekcast Radio, all one word, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episodes of the shows will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget to enter promo code Geekcast Radio when you register.
Is this thing on? Oh, goody. Why, hello there. It's your dear old Uncle Joker here. I bet you're asking yourself, what could I be possibly doing here of all places? Well, I'm laughing at the fact that this new podcast presented by Geekcast Radio is called Legends of the Dark Knight. Who the heck knew the bat was so popular? Ugh. Join Steve, Mike, and sometimes Tara for reviews on the greatest DC animated universe cartoon to ever meet Gotham City. So join moi for the talk of the town, or I'll send Captain Clown after you. He gets mighty angry when he doesn't get to have his garbage skull. So put on a nice big smile and join us for the next Geekcast Radio Network podcast, Legends of the Dark Knight.
Do you like retro shows? Did you grow up in either the 80s or the 90s? Then tune into Telecast, GeekCastRadio.com's newest podcast. Join us here on the Telecast as we revisit some of your favorite shows, such as Clarissa Explains It All, Salute Your Shorts, Saved by the Bell, and much, much more, only on GeekCastRadio.com.
Always done.
We are back on the GCR Artist Spotlight, 80s Spotlight for Stan Bush. And now we're going to talk about Stan in popular culture.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Transformers notwithstanding. Right. He's done music for, like I said, Sailor Moon. One thing we forgot to mention is 2 years ago, he was on NBC's Chuck, which was, I remember Stan being very, very excited about that, and nerds everywhere were like, fuck yeah. That's one of the things. Stan's music has appeared in toys. I remember, once again, going back to Transformers, when they re-released Masterpiece Prime over here, when they called him Anniversary Prime, there was a bass that sang. Yep. And if you have, Hasbro sent me a press kit 2 years ago for Revenge of the Fallen, and one of them was a Bumblebee blaster cannon. Yep. And if you press the buttons enough times, you get a sample of the touch.
Oh, yeah.
Which was pretty kick-ass. I'm trying to think of other things. I mean, in popular culture, you see a lot of people use the touch for different TV series. I've seen it used for Gundam Wing. I've seen it used for any number of different anime series. So he's out there. Like, people know who he is. Like I said, once you play the touch, they know immediately who he is. Which is, I think, a testament to just how powerful the music has been and how influential the 86 movie was. I'm trying to think of other things through popular culture where he's appeared.
The most recent thing that the touch has appeared in 2011, the WWE Slammy Awards Raw episode, they used the touch for John Laurinaitis's tribute.
That's kind of cool. Oh, yeah.
It's so hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. He's also in Rock Band 3. Stan got some of his music in the Rock Band radio network, where you can download tracks directly from the artists. He was in Guitar Hero, like I said, World Tour, when that was released in 2009, I want to say, World Tour was, before the franchise went to shit. like I said, his music's out there. And I sincerely hope he has a chance to do more and more music. Like I said, I'm really happy he did Dream the Dream. I'm hoping if he is doing a CD of just cover songs, I really hope he does really well. I'd love to hear his version of Mask. And I'd also like to hear him take on Go-Go Power Rangers, which I just realized I have to download that CD again. Shit. Or one theme I think that might be kind of fun, because Stan is such a talented guitar player. The original theme, the Dragon Ball Z Rock the Dragon, which is a fantastic little instrumental piece. I'd like to hear Stan do that because it's so fast. So that might be kind of cool. I hope Stan does more music for video games, in fact.
Yeah.
Because there's so many more franchises he could branch out to.
Oh, yeah, see, you know what, I don't know what the next, because I know we had Black Ops, and I know now this past year and this year now in 2012 is Modern Warfare 3. I honestly think if he did some sort of, you know, rock 'em up type of song to fit into Call of Duty.
See, I think the problem is because Stan has that family thing, I can't see him doing something like that, but...
Yeah.
I think a racing game like Project Gotham or Forza might be kind of cool, or to see him work with that. I mean, I don't know how well this would work, but I'd love to see just Stan's music as incidental music in, say, Dead Rising or something like that, or even Saints Row.
Oh, yeah. Having him in Saints Row would be awesome. I'm hoping, and probably when we get more details later, you know, because Fall of Cybertron is coming December 1st of this year, so hopefully as 2012 progresses, we'll get more, obviously we'll get more information. Hopefully he'll have either, they'll reuse Till All Are One as the end credit song, or he might have something new in that. So
I would imagine he'll do something new.
Yeah, oh yeah. It could be.
But yeah, that's pretty much all I've got to say about the guy. I mean, like I said, I really like him. I'm glad he's staying consistent with his music and does not necessarily force himself to say, hey, I have to change to keep up. If you like what you like, you'll like Stan Bush. I think he's very much a snapshot of the 80s that still endures and changes just enough over time so you're not bored of him.
Oh, yeah, exactly. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Geekcaster Radio and wish you'll join us next time when we'll be finishing out the 80s artist spotlight when we talk about USA for Africa's We Are the World. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Mike the Birdman Dodd.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Well, as I often say whenever I sign off of the things that I do, live free or die hard, guys. We'll catch you again next time.
Just listen to Geekcast Radio on the Geekcast Radio Network. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First, visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on all of our different podcasts. Second, you can rate our show and leave us feedback in iTunes. Third, follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio. Fourth, become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/geekcastradio. Call the voicemail line 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for and your name. So until next time, unleash the geek in you.